The intercom in my office buzzes before announcing to me, "Pastor, there's a man here to see you." And I know what that means. This was in my last congregation, but it happens here too. That phrase is almost like an unwritten code. It means there's a poor or homeless person needing help or looking for a handout, depending on your perspective. And it seems everything depends on your perspective. A lawyer comes up to Jesus and asks him a question to test him. He may have been a good lawyer, but he isn't very good at giving a test because he ends up answering his own question. Love God and love neighbor. That's what God requires of us. Pretty straightforward. But this is a lawyer, so nothing is straightforward. He's got a follow-up question. Who is my neighbor? Luke tells us that the lawyer asks in order to justify himself. He recognizes that neighbor could be a pretty broad term, so it needs to be narrowed down, or, you know, loving neighbor will get really hard. I mean, if my neighbor is just the family living to the west and that old widow living to the east, I can do that. But if it includes the guy down the block who plays his music really loud and never shovels his walk, well, come on. Who is my neighbor? The lawyer doesn't want to be caught lacking. He doesn't want to be caught in violation of the rules. So he asks the question, hoping to limit neighbor to something more manageable. He's hoping to justify himself. Which sounds bad, and maybe it is. But it's a good question. There are 7.5 billion people in this world. Which ones are neighbors? Who should I care for? That's the question. Jesus responds with this parable that's familiar to most. It's one of the few teachings of Jesus that have made their way into popular culture. A man helps another who's been robbed and beaten. He provides for him, has compassion on him, is a vehicle of God's love for him. It's a great story, which Jesus finishes off with a great line, "Go and do likewise." This is a parable I want to hear. It's a good morality tale, a lesson for us to take home and use in our daily lives. Who is my neighbor? Who should I care for and help? Anyone. Anyone in need. Anyone you come upon in need is your neighbor. It's not an easy lesson, but it makes sense. Except, this isn't exactly the parable Jesus tells. It's close. Really close. But there's this one detail, this one word which messes the whole thing up. Samaritan. Here's the 1 minute history of Samaritans. You may recall from our readings through the Old Testament last fall that God's people, the Israelites, came into the promised land and formed a kingdom. You had King Saul, then David, and then Solomon. But then the kingdom split into. In the north, Samaria was the capital and center of the faith, and in the south, it was Jerusalem. A couple hundred years after David, the northern kingdom was conquered by Assyria. A couple hundred years after that, the southern kingdom fell to Babylon. To varying degrees, both peoples were able to maintain their identity. In the south, they became Jews, and in the north, Samaritans. And they hated each other. They were enemies. They were enemies in the way only those with much in common can be. Sort of like Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, or Sunnis and Shiites in Iraq. To the Jews, the Samaritans were an unclean people, their blood muddied by too much Assyrian blood, their faith just barely off, focused in the wrong places. Samaritans wouldn't have been allowed in the temple, and even eating with or touching one would have been ill-advised, to say the least. You wouldn't let your daughter bring a Samaritan home for dinner. And the disdain was mutual. There was a story of Samaritans filling the temple with human bones just before Jesus' time. And so Jesus has to throw a Samaritan into this parable. Why? Why couldn't this have been the story of the good Pharisee or the parable of the good normal guy who just happened to be walking by? Even the good Roman I could have handled. That's the sort of story you could have held on to as a morality tale, a life lesson. That's the sort of story an ancient Jewish Steve Hartman could have shared on the nightly news. You'd watch and be inspired and think, man, I need to be more like that good Roman. But no, it has to be the good Samaritan. You know, even if Jesus had included the Samaritan in the story, but just not as the hero, we could have handled that. Actually, ancient Jewish Steve Hartman would have been all over that one. You know, a Jew walks by and sees a Samaritan injured and has compassion on him. Seems right up Jesus' alley too, right? We are called to show compassion for anyone in need, even our enemies, even Samaritans. But that's not how Jesus tells it. This is the parable of the Good Samaritan. And that messes everything up. The man who shows mercy, the man we are called to see as our model for Christian behavior, is the enemy. He's unclean, unworthy, unwelcome. And he's the one. He's the good one. It's like finding out that your childhood hero cheated on his wife or was a felon or was in the Missouri Synod. How could that be? The Samaritan shows mercy. It messes it all up. I mean, the morality lesson is still there, I suppose. You can still think of the Good Samaritan as a model, as an example for how to live in this world. But the world is different now. Mercy's gone and messed it all up. Because we have a system, see? A system that is built with categories, categories of people. You've got the people in the world who are contributors, the hard workers and innovators and leaders and scientists and teachers, the folks who make the world a better place, who advance society and pay lots of taxes. And then you've got your do-gooders, the folks who might not have a career that adds much to the GDP, but they make the world better through kindness. Grandparents and missionaries and volunteers. Of course, you've got your ne'er-do-wells, your criminals, your terrorists, your bullies, your high-priced bankers using obscure securities to make a mint off people failing. And finally, you've got your dependents, the folks who can't make it on their own. Some because of choice, perhaps, leeches, they're called derisively, and others because of their situation, the sick and injured. The victims, the ones we pity. We've got these categories, see? Categories of people. You might label them differently, but we've all got categories. And the lawyer wants to know, we want to know, which categories are neighbors. And if this was the parable of the good Roman, the answer would be easy or at least straightforward. They all are. Anyone in need is one you should have mercy on, no matter the category. It's a good but tough word to hear. But when Jesus makes the merciful one a Samaritan, then it's like we don't even have categories at all. If an enemy becomes a contributor, or a leech becomes a do-gooder, then mercy is breaking down the neat lines distinguishing between categories, even the basic two categories of giver and receiver. And all of a sudden, we just have this one big group called, well, I guess called neighbors. The office intercom buzzed. Pastor, there's a man here to see you. Before going to meet the guy, I quickly checked what was left in the fund used for that sort of thing. The Good Samaritan Fund. That's what we called it back in Minnesota, and it's what we call it here, too. I brought him to my office and we talked for a little while. He told me about how he had lost his job, which caused him to fall behind on his rent. I asked if he had food and he said he had a little and had been going to the community meal offered at the local Salvation Army. But it was late fall in Minnesota and getting cold out. He needed a place to stay. Just for a few nights before his friend could let him crash on the couch. Something like that. He was in the dependent category. You never are sure if the story you hear in these sorts of conversations is true or false or somewhere in between. You never are sure about whether the person that you're talking to is a leech or one to be pitied, which subcategory they fit in, and whether that even matters. I thought about all of that as I spoke with this man, and then I thought of the parable of the Good Samaritan. Or I suppose maybe I was thinking of the parable of the good Roman, and I realized this man was one in need and we had the means to help him. He must be a neighbor, even if he was a leech. I wasn't sure a night in the Super 8 was his greatest need, but it wouldn't hurt. Before leaving, instead of saying thanks as usual, the man asked to pray with me. And he prayed to God about his needs and about his gratitude for the congregation's generosity. And then he prayed for me. He prayed for my family and for my work in the church. And I don't know how many people did that for me. I don't know how many people do that for you, but he did. And I'll admit, when I let my guard down finally, it felt good. It felt good to have someone pray for me, even a Samaritan. You know, I think Jesus did it on purpose. I don't think he picked a Samaritan at random. I think he wanted mercy to mess everything up. I think he wanted to share a nice morality lesson, but I think he also wanted to tear down those walls and ruin our system of categories. Categories we think are there to help, but so often are just used to judge and separate and excuse us from seeing one another as beloved of God. Categories which become our own prisons. Categories we need to be freed from, for we can't do it on our own. It takes a good Samaritan to free us, the kind that'll care for you when you're beat down by a robber, or pray for you when you're trapped by your own categories. I don't think Jesus liked categories very much. He preferred we all just saw each other as neighbor because that's how he sees us. It's definitely messier. And it doesn't answer at all how to love. But in addition to a nice little morality piece, this story of the Good Samaritan does give us something we really need, a new perspective on one another. And it seems everything depends on perspective. Amen.